This session today is June the 1st, 2016. It's 9 a.m. And if we would please stand, we'll all say the Pledge of Allegiance before we begin the meeting.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which stands one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, first on our agenda today, we have recognition of employees, and we have Sherry Householder, 10 years of service with the District Attorney's Office, and we have, where's her? Okay, I'm sorry, our certificate isn't here. I apologize. Anyway, Terry, if you'd please stand and come on up. Thank you so much. Thank you. Yes, 10 years, that's wonderful. Service to the people of Josephine County and our district attorney's office. And it's nice to be able to recognize those employees who have spent that amount of time with us. Nowadays, it's often unusual that people spend 10 years or more with an employer, but we certainly do like to keep your expertise, and we appreciate having you. Thank you. Sherry. This is a 10-year pin for Josephine County. There.
So we, thank you.
Thank you.
You too. Thanks for your work.
I'd just like to say that every time I've gone up to the district attorney's office, when I see her face, she's always got the answer directing me to the right person, and I just really, really appreciate that. It's sometimes not the most pleasant place to visit if you need to, as a client or a constituent of the county or somebody else, it can be not the most pleasant place. But for her, she just has such a great positive vibe and an attitude that is a great representation of Josephine County and the service we try to provide.
We have some others that we want to recognize that they are not attending today. Stephen Barker, 5 years with our transit department. Randy Schutte, 5 years with transit. Alice Stafford, 10 years with juvenile justice. And Stephen Kacha, 20 years with public works. I do hope I pronounce his name correctly.
I'm not sure.
Kacha, okay. But 20 years with public works, that's amazing. Our public works department seems to have a lot of longevity, and that's really nice because longevity is a very good thing in our departments. Okay, moving on, item two. We have a proclamation today in the matter proclaiming the month of June 2016 as Grants Pass Food Project Month. And I'm going to read the proclamation, and then I'm going to have some folks come up that are here. In the matter of proclaiming the month of June 2016 as Grants Pass Food Project Month, whereas more than 12,000 people in our county, including 3,500 children and 3,000 of the elderly and disabled, require emergency food assistance each month in our county. That's each month. And whereas the working poor members of our city and county struggle monthly for their basic needs and services, and whereas the Josephine County Food Bank, through its network of 25 pantries, kitchens, and agencies, provides over 2,170,000 meals annually. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the Josephine County Board of Commissioners does hereby proclaim the month of June 2016 as Grants Pass Food Project Month in Josephine County and calls upon citizens to join in this special observance. Done and dated this first day of June 2016, Josephine County Board of Commissioners, Cheryl Walker Chair, Keith Heck Vice Chair, and Simon Hare Commissioner. And we have four people here from that project. And if you would come forward and receive the proclamation, and please take a few minutes to talk about this program. Mr. Engel. Please step to the microphone. Thank you.
Thank you very much for honoring this project. You listed out most of the details, the reason that we're continuing to engage in the fight against hunger. It's still very real, and there are a lot of people suffering in hunger every day. the Grants Pass Food Project is unique in the way that it builds not only community relationships between neighbors, but also a community relationship between people who have the ability to help and people who need some support. The main purpose of all of the work that we do is to make sure that people are comfortable, safe, happy, and healthy, and of course with dignity and compassion. This project is modeled differently than most food drives in that you're trying to get neighbors to communicate with one another around the needs that are in the community and then bring food back to the Josephine County Food Bank for distribution throughout the county so that it can reach everybody in their homes, so that we can have children who are able to succeed academically and physically, seniors who maintain a physical well-being, and of course adults who are strong enough to maintain employment, care for dependents, and seek employment if that's the case. Thank you very much.
I have a question.
Please.
On the project that is just about to begin, will you be kicking that off very soon in regards to this neighborhood type project?
Yeah, June 11th, next Saturday, is going to be the first day of the Grants Pass Food Project. We're going to start small. We're working with Fish Food Pantry, Joe's Place, and the Women's Crisis Support Team for the first rollout. And then as the project gets bigger and we have more neighborhoods participating, we'll be including more of the 20 to 25 agencies we work with. And hopefully by this time next year, we'll have all 25 on board.
Great. Any further questions?
Yeah. How many volunteers are involved in the food bank?
Throughout the course of the year, between 200 and 300 volunteers in all of our projects. If you include all of the partners we work with who distribute food in their communities, we've got probably over 1,000 volunteers in all the different kitchens and pantries.
So it would be suffice to say that without volunteers, there would be no food bank.
That is true. As much as we have staff who do their jobs at the food bank, we would not be able to do the work that we do without community support.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Engel. And we have some other folks here that are on that project. I see Jill Gleistein and Sue Fahey and Barbara Bean, and I know that they have an integral part to play in this new food project. So thank you all for being here this morning, and good luck on the beginning of the new food bank program. Thank you.
Three of those important volunteers, none of them are remunerated from the food bank. So.
No, they're all volunteers. Yeah. Thank you. And they work on the farm, too. They not only work for the food bank itself, but the Raptor Creek Farm, which is a very good project. Thank you. Okay, we have another presentation this morning by the Republic Services of Grants Pass, and they have a program here, so whoever is going to do this, would you please step forward and state your name for the record and go ahead and begin your program.
Good morning. I'm Julie Jackson with Republic Services, and I think you've met Don.
And I'm Don Moss with Republic Services.
As well, and we thought we'd kind of tag team this morning. We're really pleased to be here today to talk to you about recycling for Josephine County residents, who are our customers. As you know, that's already happening with the other hauler, Southern Oregon Sanitation, but this is something, I'll go to this slide and we'll talk a little bit about what currently is happening, and it's pretty simple. Currently, we have a trash program. We pick up trash at homes and residences in the county, and all material that could be recycled is going to the landfill. Now, that's with the exception of those folks who are really super good recyclers, and they actually bring that material into several depots, but our depot, we see a lot of people from the county and who are bringing that material in and hauling it themselves. So we know there's a lot of interest in recycling in the county. Also, folks tend to need a larger trash can if they're going to have no other alternative except to throw everything away. The other thing that I didn't list on here, but I think it's worth saying, is there's a lot of trash everywhere around the state in county areas, farther out you go, that gets burned because maybe there's not enough room for it. So we think there are a lot of benefits to providing a recycling program. The new program would be very simple. Folks would still have their trash pickup, but we'd provide them with a recycling cart as well. We know that there are folks who have a tough time bearing the burden of paying for an additional service. So we have listed, the customers can actually opt out. If they produce small amounts of trash, then they're able to opt out of the recycling program and have an on-call service. And that would be just a service where you call us when your trash cart is full and we'll pick it up. We don't charge you for, in essence, picking it up every week at the curb. And, you know, that works really well a lot of times for seniors, folks who generate really small amounts of trash. I would say that if you generate more trash than that, a recycling cart's going to help you because it's the same amount of waste. You don't have any more waste. You're just putting it in two different carts now. So it kind of stands to reason that you could downsize your trash cart, and many people will be able to do that with a recycling cart. The great part is they have the option to do that. You don't have to downsize your trash cart and recycle, but if it's something that you choose to do, you certainly have that option. So customers can recycle. There are a lot of benefits to recycling, and I will just kind of skip to that next page and talk about it because that's really my passion. When I started with this company about 11 years ago, I was a recycle educator. And so what I did is I went out and I talked to people about recycling and about the importance of not just recycling but reducing waste in general. And I think when we talk about food pantries and food banks and we start to understand that upwards of 20% of what actually goes in the trash in Oregon is food. And so I think it's really important for us to sort of change that culture and talk about what we don't put in the trash, what we're not putting in the landfill. And food is definitely one of those things as well. And, you know, this today we're shining the spotlight on recyclable materials, but really there are so many great reasons to recycle. And if you think about maybe 30 years ago, we really didn't recycle anything. We just had a trash cart and we threw everything away. Now in Oregon, nearly 50% of all waste is either reused or recycled or composted. So that's a huge change, and I think people really, really want that change. Our company calls waste the evolving ton. So we don't, and I've been asked many times, don't you just really want us to throw it away? You make more money if we put it in the trash. And the truth is, we're hauling companies. We haul what folks like us to haul, and we'll haul it where you want us to haul it. We would much rather haul material to a recovery facility for recycling than to the landfill. And that comes from a company that owns landfills. But we know that there are some responsible ways to do things and that recycling is one of those things. So virtually all clean paper can be recycled into new products. Metals are melted, and in Oregon they're made into things like rebar. There we go. So they're made into things like rebar. That happens here in Oregon. Actually, in McMinnville, there's a big facility that does that. Aluminum is one of those materials that it's almost a crime to throw away because it's so energy intensive. And so the standard line is the amount of energy saved when you recycle an aluminum can over throwing it away is about 95%. It kind of correlates to running a television for 2 hours for just one can recycled. So aluminum is really valuable. And as you probably have heard, plastic markets have ebbed and flowed in the last couple of years. We're very dependent on an international climate for plastic markets. But because we're committed to recycling and because we're careful about the plastics that we tell people to put in the cart, we have found markets for those. We take all those plastics. Once we tell you it goes in the cart, we're never going to take it out of the cart. And we're careful before we tell you it can go in the cart. As I said before, some customers will be able to reduce their bill by downsizing to a smaller cart. And we estimate about 2,500 tons of commingled recycling could be recovered. And that saves resources because, you know, once something's thrown away, it's gone. It's not a resource any longer, and it really is a valuable resource when we recycle it. It saves energy and it saves landfill space. So there are a lot of, I think, great reasons to recycle. Perhaps the biggest one in this area is that we're hearing that from our customers. As soon as the word got out that SOS was going to be offering recycling, we started getting those phone calls as well, and that was really the impetus for us coming here to talk to you about it because we try really hard to listen to our customers. So that's where we are with recycling. I'm going to let Dawn talk a little bit about rates and where we are with that. And then if you have any questions, we'd be happy to answer any that you have.
Thank you.
Good morning. Don Moss, I'm the division manager for Grants Pass, Republic Services Grants Pass. So the chart before you today is the historical residential rates versus CPI, and we put this together to kind of show an example. In the prior meetings, we talked about some of the costs that have that we've incurred over the last 10 to 15 years. And as you can see, according to the chart, the bottom line is that we've, you know, been able to maintain our prices for that 17 years. and our original franchise was finally amended in 2000, was the last amendment, and we've seen stable prices since then. But we all know that the cost for everything has risen, and of course those costs associated with a hauling operation or a transfer station have risen precipitously. We've seen so, according to this, you know, the CPI, the prices for the CPI, if with the price increase that we're asking for in the value added here, it would basically be in line with if we had done a CPI change for the last 15 years. And then, of course, this is a rate comparison on a 32-gallon cart. And as you can see, Southern Oregon Sanitation and Grants Pass, or Republic Services Grants Pass, are well below the local area. And what we're asking for today is not only to implement a recycling program, which we feel, as Julia stated, we feel very is needed and wanted within our community, but also to bring in line and create consistency between the two franchises. So we're just asking for the prices and the same services that Southern Oregon Sanitation. We don't want to end up in a situation that we have right now, in certain instances where we have one customer across the street that's getting provided a particular service for a different price, and then we're unable, based on the franchise and what we have within it, to provide that same service at that same rate. And that's what I have for you today. We'd be happy to take any questions that you have.
Commissioner Hare?
Yes, I have a couple. Can you explain your revenue and your franchise agreement, how that's all organized and codified?
Okay. So, as I said, we have a franchise agreement with the county, and we've had that since 2000, actually before 2000, but the last, I guess, amendment version of that was in 2000. You know, we are contracted to go out and do the services for all residential and commercial and industrial, so any of the drop boxes or restaurants or whatnot within the county.
So you don't provide service to the whole county, though?
We do not. That's actually split by territory. That territory line was derived a long, long time ago. But we take care of the area closest to the freeway, I guess is the way I would describe it, on this side of the river.
So between the freeway and the river, or?
So essentially from, there's a, I guess the demarcation is an agricultural ditch back in the 19, a long time ago. And basically that agricultural ditch just on the other side of, or right in between 199. And then everything east of that. And then following that line north to the top of the county.
Okay, great. And your revenues, how are those regulated?
So we have essentially we have a 13%, you know, a 13% profitability restriction. So the revenues that we bring in, as long as we remain, it's kind of difficult, Mr. Hare, but we have allowable expenses. So all the expenses associated with collecting and moving the waste, and any monies after the 13% of profitability, would be split between Republic Services and the Solid Waste Agency.
So this isn't necessarily as a your revenues are fairly capped, and so after that it goes to the Solid Waste Agency, which does programs for additional collections of materials that are really challenging. They do the tire drive. They'll
right.
remediate solid waste challenges around the county with input from the city and the county and some other good programs.
Absolutely. As well as trash cleanups. They work with the, I forget the group, but it's part of the city and police and also the sheriff's department. We also have school boards that come in for asbestos removal. So there's a lot of great programs that are funded by this.
Isn't there some funding that goes to the Clean Forest Project, maybe?
That's right. Okay. Yeah, absolutely. For many years in the past, a significant amount of that money has gone towards that. The original intent of the money was for landfill monitoring and reclamation, and that is a consistent. That money is consistently used for that purpose. But any of the extra money that they have within that budget goes towards those special programs.
Yeah, I think the county utilizes that program. My next two questions are a little bit different. They're off topic just a tad, but because I have you here, and I wanted to highlight these issues. Something that was a thought I had when I first took office was a county office, not the county at large. This is a great program, and it's great that SOS has put that place and you guys have matched that program, but the county itself is probably lacking in its recycle program internally. I know that through Public Works or our facilities, on a grander scale of things, we do recycle as much as possible, but my thought is for general trash purposes, we really don't have very much of a robust program, and that might be your question, something you can answer. How could we get an evaluation of maybe how we could reduce our use of just general trash that's being hauled to a landfill and implement some sort of maybe a phased approach to a recycling program at the county? I know that we have very limited custodial staff, so it needs to be something that we can do fairly easy and implement, so it's not an additional workload. Is that something?
So you are right on task, because we know that recycling is effective when it's easy. I mean, it's really that simple. And when I used to teach a master recycler program, I used to say we're all really lazy and we want to do it the easy way, and that's how we participate. So a couple of things. We have a recycling specialist who can come and actually do an audit and walk through with custodial staff, office staff, whomever you'd like to be part of it. Sometimes it's a team that gets put together by people who are interested. They call it a green team or a sustainability team. And we can actually walk through and do an audit, look at what maybe you could be recycling that you're not recycling. The other thing that's really exciting and that Dawn and I have just been talking about would be a great test place for that is we have a new program with some containers. And I know that seems simplistic, but containers make all the difference. If it's really easy and they're the same throughout all of the offices and all of the buildings, then people don't have to know what a whole bunch of different things look like to recycle. And they come to know that this particular blue bin means all the office paper goes in it, and here's one for aluminum cans, and then this is what trash looks like.
Right.
So that's one of the programs we would love to bring to the county facilities, and certainly we have a recycling coordinator, and I can come and help as well. We can both come down and work on that project as well. It's exciting, and we've worked with other county and cities to do that, and it seems to be pretty effective.
That would be great. I would love to work. I'm the facilities liaison from the board.
Oh, awesome.
And I think that would make a lot of sense. So maybe we could start with the audit and then have some sort of a presentation to the board before making that kind of an adjustment.
Absolutely. We'd love to do that.
The cost effectiveness of it. The second question that I had is more of a kind of a personal nature, because I don't think that the county generates a lot of compostable materials other than our landscaping, which we do compost. But how do you see, as a recycler, the composting problem in an urban setting? I think that's going to be a challenge for a lot of people to kind of get their heads around. How do you do that when you're in a high-density residential area or mm-hmm. something like that?
Do you mean adding material like food scraps that
you said 20% yep. of the state's
yeah.
Waste is maybe food material?
According to the last audit done by the Department of Environmental Quality, it could be a little more than that. You know, one of the great things is that we have experience. We actually have a compost facility in Corvallis, and so we have been collecting food scraps there in the residential neighborhoods. Portland does it, Salem does it, Eugene's not quite there yet. It sort of depends on having a facility that can handle that type 3 feedstock at the facility. But in terms of just neighborhoods, the way that we believe it has to work is that we have to pick that material up weekly. And by picking it up weekly and by educating folks that, you know, you probably don't want to fill a cart completely with food. And if you are, shame on you, because that's a lot of waste. But it gets mixed with yard debris, dry material, brush. Even some folks who don't have much yard waste, we encourage them to put a pizza box in the bottom or some newspaper in the bottom. We've learned a lot of tricks along the way. We encourage them to sprinkle a little baking soda in the bottom. So there are a lot of ways.
So it's a separate container?
It's one container that includes all organic material. So it would be yard debris, grass clippings, and food scraps at the same time. And so it's funny, I was just talking about this last night, and we just don't have a problem when it gets picked up weekly. We think, you know, if you're going to have a day that's 105 degrees and it were to sit for 2 weeks, that could be a problem. But because it's weekly, not that much food gets put in. And the kind of food like that you might think could have a lot of odor are typically the foods we don't waste as much of, meats and dairy products. So it's a fear that a community always has that we've been able to mitigate pretty well and haven't had a lot of problems.
Restaurants and grocery stores seems to be the most logical place to start with that, because they just generate a tremendous amount of potentially organic, compostable material.
It's kind of the low-hanging fruit to start there, and that is real
workable.
Schools
have tried to implement that as a program. I don't want to use a bunch of time here, but
I'll just tell you there's some great programs around the state, and we can certainly share any information you'd like.
I know
like.
The Solid Waste Agency has talked about this as an issue, and then somehow recycling styrofoam. I think SOS was proposing to try to purchase a compactor of some sort.
And
that's a major deal as well.
It's very expensive. And like I always say, the problem is there have been about 5 styrofoam recyclers in Portland since I've been with the company, and they kind of come and go because they can't break even. I always call styrofoam the Cheeto of the plastic world. You know, it's a little bit of plastic and a lot of air, so it takes a lot of it to densify, and it's an expensive process. Marion County has a program, and they use the juvenile youth program works at it, and I think they're still not sold. It's a really, really tough product. I would say one of our toughest, for sure.
Thank you very much.
Sure. Thank you.
Appreciate you being here. Okay, moving on to our administrative calendar, item number 4A, approval of resolution number 2016-044 in the matter of amending the solid waste collection franchise agreement with Grants Pass Sanitation, DBA Republic Services of Grants Pass, and the franchise agreement amendment number 2016-1. And I have on here Wally Hicks, but he's not here today.
I would say it was probably relative to the presentation we just received.
Yeah, the presentation, I think, has covered it very well. So I don't think we need to go into any further detail on that. Item 4B, and B and C kind of go together. Approval of order number 2016-018 in the matter of regulation of motor vehicle parking on Galise Road. And then C is approval of order number 2016-019 in the matter of regulation of motor vehicle parking on Pierce Park Road. If Commissioner Hare would
updated
address those.
Agenda, because I have those as 2016-042, which sounds way out of order. Yes, I have an old one. You have a new one. I would be happy to speak to those. So the item 4B in the matter of regulation of that motor vehicle along Galise Road is a parallel to the park boundary. There's a safety element of that corridor, really all of the corridor going out to ending at Graves Creek. and getting on the river. The issue is really around people parking their boat trailers and their boats for accessing the boat ramp at Enos Riffle, and causing unneeded congestion there. There's plenty of parking down at Enos Riffle in that boat landing area. It's all gravel, and we've improved the ramp approaching that. You've got a tremendous number of people who are accessing the river during the day, either for fishing or boating, and then you've got these large vehicles going back and forth, sometimes logging trucks. The area is just not conducive to people parking on the road. There's very little shoulder area, and there's plenty of parking at the boat ramp. And the next one, the Pierce Park road, I don't think there's a boat ramp there. There isn't. And that is an issue of people parking outside the park to access the park in a really challenging area. It's a pretty steep descent. If you've ever been to Tom Pierce Park, coming down that slope, it curves. There is a little bit of a shoulder area on one side, but people park on both sides. They bike in, they walk in, and there's really no need for that. There's adequate parking within that park facility, and that's really the safest place for people to park. So that's the purpose of these. Something that's a little bit different for these no parking areas is that we don't have adequate staffing in our sheriff's department to facilitate the regulation of this, and so we're specifically outlining in both of these orders to give park staff, when appropriate, under the jurisdiction and authority of the park's manager and director, to oversee this regulation.
And for clarification, I do have the corrected copies here. The ones that are on are online on our computers.
I just had a lot to present, so I printed out one, so it accurately is reflected in the handwritten corrections. So,
okay, thank you.
As order number 2018 and 2019, respectively.
Commissioner Herrick, Heck, do you have something you wish to say?
The concept, I fully support the idea that we have to realize that road is simply not wide enough to have people parking on both sides of the road and expect boats or trailers or whatever else to get down that road safely, because people are walking on them, and you're not expecting to get tailboned by some vehicle when you're out walking down the road in the proper way. I have no problem with supporting this idea, the concept. My only reason that I'm going to vote no on this is because I think it needs to be timed in. It needs to be a 30-day or a period of time for people to go from having the understanding, I've parked there for the last 10 years. Now I can't park there as of today, and I'm going to get ticketed for it. I just don't, that, and that's my reason for voting no, is I think we need to have more of a time frame of saying a 30-day awareness period of time for people to realize you can't do this. But I have no problem with the concept at all. I think it is needed.
Just for clarification, that these signs will be posted, no parking. So if a driver is reading the signs along the road, they'll not park there. So I wanted just to reassure people that there's not going to be just parking there, no signage. There will be signs, no parking. It will be posted.
And the effective date is when the signs are posted.
Right, the effective date is when
the orders
posted.
Are posted.
Yeah. They're not going to be sighting out there today because the signs aren't up yet. So when the signs go up, that's when it'll go into effect. Okay, item 4D, approval of the contract with PropertyRoom.com for the auction services for unclaimed property in the possession of the sheriff. And I think we have Carrie Lee here today from our sheriff's department. And we were talking about this on our radio show yesterday, and I could remember property, and Commissioner Heck can remember room. So between the two of us, we got it right.
Good deal. Good morning. Carrie Lee, Jessamine County Sheriff's Office. The sheriff's office is charged with maintaining evidence and trying to get property back to owners when it's found. And getting rid of that if we can't find the owner or the owner doesn't respond to our letters or whatever, it's has been a very laborious project for me personally. And the reason we're going with PropertyRoom.com is I can call them and here's a pile of stuff, go get rid of it for me, rather than me having to prep it, catalog it, physically go to the auction and then do all my data entry after the auction. All of that will be done for me. So it will very much speed up the process of that and take a big chunk of time off my back.
I think it's important for people to know that you are the staff.
I'm it.
For the county property. So all of the evidence that is seized and all of the accidents and any crime that occurs out there where anything is seized, it goes to Carrie Lee.
That's right.
And Carrie Lee is the department.
Yes.
So
I do have two volunteers, thank God.
Thank goodness for volunteers that help you move that stuff around. And there is a lot of it.
Yes.
But I appreciate that. Thank you. And I think this will be a really big help for you and get rid of some of that stuff. So thank you.
And any of you are welcome to come out and get a tour of the warehouse anytime you'd like. Ms. Walker's been there. But
I think that's one of the things I haven't seen yet.
And no, you haven't.
One of those buildings I probably need to.
It's an eye-opener, Commissioner.
I think this is going to be a good thing. One of the reasons we're doing this relook, people may remember that we had this on the agenda at least a week or two ago, and it was the idea that we make sure that we don't have some sort of a business in Josephine County, within Grants Pass, or even Southern Oregon that can kind of facilitate this on our behalf for the Sheriff's Department. And so taking that another look, there are auction facilitators here. They're just not really set up for what the high level of scrutiny that we're looking to achieve in our Sheriff's Department with the evidence. So I think this makes a lot of sense. I would like to say that maybe it's important to take a relook. This is the first time we've really
Absolutely.
Used them to make sure that everything they're promising is exactly what they're going to deliver, and that you feel comfortable going forward that this is the best way to do it. So just making sure that this isn't an end-all be-all, that we're going to have this contract forever, that you're going to obviously have an opportunity to relook at this next year.
Yeah, and I think that's really important because there's going to be changes. I know a lot of property rooms across the state use propertyroom.com, across the country actually. And there are other online companies. So it's still an evolving thing, but it is definitely the wave of the future because we're all understaffed.
Yeah, just one question, too. Can you help us better understand the amount of goods, property, that you are having to process and, two, that will be going online? Are we talking about, you know, six guns and two cars? Or what are we talking about so that people can get a better picture of what all that you are doing?
The evidence facility is 6,700 square feet. And it has almost an acre lot, which holds all the NVA fatals, missing person, homicide vehicles, the worst of the worst, basically. And recently, with a string of burglaries that we just busted in Josephine County, we received 40 pallets of property. And a pallet is typically 4x4. That's a lot of property. And in doing my last month's stat report, which is very fresh in my mind, I had, in a 22-day work period, I had 27 appointments during the month of May. I got rid of three pallets of property, which is a significant amount, got it back to the owners. And as far, you know, we've got guns, we've got hundreds of guns, you know, drugs, guns, money, anything used in a crime, any kind of a crime, whether it's a burglary, whether it's a criminal mischief, whatever, murder, suicide, all of that comes in. I'm going to guesstimate right now we have about 40, 45,000 items of property. And obviously not all of that is sellable because it's illegal, but...
Right.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Appreciate you being here.
Have a good day.
Thank you. Okay. Items 4E and F. Commissioner Hare will take care of those again. That's approval of a timber sale contract with Greg Lyles Logging, the Walker Complex, 2016 T3, no relation to me. Item F, approval of the timber sale contract with Swanson Group Manufacturing LLC, Bear Gulch, 2016 T7.
Yes, Madam Chair, the first one, the Walker Complex, is a timber sale of our forestry department. We have about 30,000 acres that we manage on a sustained yield rotating basis. And this year, There's 1.2 million board feet associated with that Walker Complex sale. The expected revenue to be generated is roughly $275,000. It's not the best value timber that we're putting up in this timber sale, but it needs to be managed and kind of brought back into the portfolio of a manageable complex. The other sale that happened is the Bear Gulch timber sale. That's 800,000 board feet, and that's expected revenue generating of $155,800. Both of those timber sales are three-year contracts, so the contractor has the ability to harvest over the next 3 years. The sales have been restructured to where 50% of the value is paid in the first year. So at the time of signing the contract, when we're done here today, both of those purchasers will be responsible for 50% of the revenue that's expected to be generated on that. All of it equalizes out over the 3 years, so they can harvest it in the first year, which means they'd pay for all of it in the first year, or over the next couple of years. The volume is calculated at the mill who processes the wood, and then at the end of the day, at the end of the sale, we make an equalization of whether or not we've overestimated the expected volume that was harvested or we've underestimated it. Most of the time, we like to be conservative to where we're getting an additional check at the end, not having to pay back potentially at the end. But those revenues are brought back into the forestry department. The additional ones outside of the budgeted money goes into a trust that's established, and at the discretion of the board is put into the highest prioritization of the county.
Thank you. Okay. Item 5, requests and comments from citizens. Each person will be given 3 minutes. Please come forward, speak into the microphone, and address the board, state your name and your address. You don't have to give your street number, just the city of your residence. So I will start right over here on the left with Mr. Ertl.
Bill Ertl, Williams, Oregon. Commissioner Walker, I'm here this morning to talk a little bit about your meetings that you're holding throughout the county, and I think that's great. I got the flyer yesterday via email, so I printed it off and I distributed it to a couple of bulletin boards out in the Williams area. I would just say I noticed the title is Marijuana, the Future, which I'm okay with. I have a slight concern in that I live and work in Williams, and I'm okay with the new industry. I do believe that there will be some citizens that will look at that and not attend. And I'm wondering if there's some way we can encourage the non-active people in the cannabis industry to attend if they have an opinion on the program. And that's my thoughts today. And I just say that because a lot of the non-industry cannabis people stop by my office and grumble. And it'd be nice if they showed up at your meeting. So if I can help in any way, I'd be glad to do that.
Thank you.
Thank you.
What Mr. Ertl was referring to, and I put them in the lobby out on the table there, is a schedule of town hall meetings that the county will be hosting. The first one is Thursday, June 9th at the Williams Grange in Williams at 6:30 p.m. And the title of the program is Marijuana Planning Ahead. And so the issues that we're going to be talking about is what the board is planning, what we're considering doing, what we would like to have from the public in regards to future regulation or future management as far as land use and planning. So that's why it's titled the way it is, but his comments are well taken. Okay, I saw another hand over here in the back row. Please. Please state your name and where you live.
Sure. My name's Joe Gray, and I live over here on 5th.
Mr. Gray, can you do it into the mic so we can make sure we have that for the record?
Say again?
Do you mind doing it into the mic so we have it for the record?
My name's Joe Gray.
Joe.
I'm a sixth-generation Oregonian. My dad was born here. My grandpa was born here. And many generations before that. Why I'm here is because I hear you guys talk about this and about that, and you want to put funds towards this and towards that. $400,000. $400,000 to put a couple extra police on the street. This is me. I habitually pick up needles, crack pipes, meth pipes, bags of dope, and you people have the authority and the ability to create a better environment so that my children waiting at a bus stop don't have to be inundated with dope and all the bad, nasty stuff that comes with it. There was a dead body within a stone's throw of a bus stop that my children have been attending since 2012. And you people are busy hiring PR firms and repainting pickup trucks with stupid logos that are one-offs of the original, and you think you're doing some good? You people don't have a conscience between you, and there ain't a moral that would satisfy this. I am completely, completely disappointed with you people, especially you, Mr. Hare. While you were at a strip club, you got voted into a primary position. You were one text message away from being a pedophile. If she'd have referred back and said, yes, come on over. Come on, buddy. You're on tape saying, I know we broke the law or we're breaking the law, and I don't care.
Mr. Gray.
Ms. Walker, I have nothing to say to you, ma'am. You guys have a great day. And please, for the next generation, get your stuff wired straight. Goodbye.
Making accusations of someone
true.
Being a
It's on footage. You can go to badcounty.com and see it for yourselves. Be blessed.
Don't make accusations of someone being a criminal or a pedophile.
Bye-bye.
Good. Okay, I saw another hand. Mr. Ford.
You did it now, Larry.
Wiped it out. Larry Ford, 136 Ferry Road, Grants Pass. The parking restrictions we're talking about today, we've discussed those several times in our parks board. It's a long time coming, and it's about time. These people are not parking on the road because it's convenient. They don't want to pay to use our parks. So they want to use them for free, and then they want someone else to fund them. So I think this is something that has been a long overdue, I think it should be, as soon as the signs are up, they should start getting citations if they continue to park there. There are some very safe, unsafe conditions, especially at Tom Pierce. There's hardly, it's not a very wide road to start with. You park on the shoulder there, you're cutting off about 15 or 20% of the road that the traffic goes down. So I think this is something that was long time in coming, and I'm glad that you're moving forward on it. So thank you.
Mr. Ford, another hand. Joseph Rice.
Good morning, Commissioners. Joseph Rice, Grants Pass. With regard to the parks and the parking, as a Josephine County resident, I would like to have access to the parks. We pay taxes. We should have that. I would propose that if they're not a resident of Josephine County, a fee is charged. That would encourage parking. So maybe there's a resident pass to the park that would be at a lower fee than those that are not residents of the county. The main reason I came to speak today is on Saturday, Senator Wyden was in town. Commissioner Walker and Commissioner Heck were there. One of the most disturbing things I heard had to deal with the Illinois Valley mineral withdrawal of 101,000 acres. The senator stated that they are going to see how much they can do this administratively working with the agencies. They are completely bypassing our representation and citizen representation. We elect those officials there to make law. And once again, we have federal government overreach into Josephine County that is strangling the economy. It is taking and targeting one type of use and withdrawing it. I can't take my 11-year-old daughter down the Illinois Valley and say, when I was 11, this is how we panned for gold. This is what my father taught me. We've lost that ability. That withdrawal, even though it's administrative, is not in conformance with NEPA. They did not do an economic impact study to the communities. And the communities have to be done individually, not Josephine County as a whole. At what point is the Board of County Commissioners going to stand up forcefully to the Bureau of Land Management, to the United States Forest Service, challenge them that they're not complying with their own policy and regulations, and this current administrative withdrawal is illegal? At what point are they going to challenge the circumventing of the citizens? We are being strangled to death by administrative regulation and rule. It's not legal, it's not just, and the county suffers economically. People lose the ability to provide for their families and their livelihood. Thank you.
Anyone else on this side? Yes, sir. Oh, yes, ma'am, I'm sorry. All I can see pretty much was the top of your head and your hand. Thank you.
Catherine Austin, Cave Junction. I'd like to talk about the budget meetings that have just taken place. I watched some of the footage with Arthur O'Hare presenting, and what the lottery fund money, the $400,000 that was available for economic development. Margaret Goodwin had pointed out that in Jackson County, they were able to use 100% of their funds for funding the sheriff, for public safety. We seem to have a real roadblock going on here with an ability to give any money to the sheriff. I'm deeply concerned about that. As far as I know, the first and only legitimate duty of government is to provide for the safety of the public. Along with the $1.5 million of windfall revenue that was unexpected that you've put into the Public Works Department and no money to be able to be used to the sheriff. And we were supposed to be having an emergency that we were going to go to the governor because we're having a physical emergency. We can't fund the sheriff. I'm floored. There's like $2 million there, $1.5 million or $400,000 from the lottery. And supposedly crime is an impediment for attracting business here for economic development. Crime is a turnoff for opportunities for business. If that is the case, why aren't we funding the sheriff first? As far as your plans, your creative ideas, which we know is basically a levy, obviously the voters keep speaking to you. We vote over and over again, no new taxes. If you were to have your way with a levy, a family right now in our economically impoverished community in our county, a family who is now paying $1,000 for property taxes would easily be paying $3,500. People, retired people, yes, 3.5 times, Cheryl,
no.
And even Simon,
no.
You admitted
that
to
is
it
not
too.
True.
No,
100%
wrong.
$1.99 levy. It's my turn to talk. Excuse me.
You're right.
That's what I said. Just wait.
$1.99.58. Do the math. $1.99 levy would be 3.5 times what we are paying right now rurally. Do the math. $1,000, $3,500. That could force people out of their homes. And we supposedly have an issue with homelessness tied to with crime. I mean, this month of food for the people in this county, that is showing a reflection that we are not economically doing well. People are dependent on assistance. I also would like to talk about the proposal with Arthur O'Hare that from J.J. Schofield and Larry West that you guys get pay increases. I think you should get demerit pay increases for this behavior. That government is best, which governs least. Thank you.
I'd like to clarify the way taxes are calculated. When people receive a bill every year, and the example that was used was $1,000 for your property taxes, the majority of that goes to schools. Rogue Community College, you're in Three Rivers District, Grants Pass District. If you're in a water district, a sewer district, a fire district, if you're in the rural areas and have land, that goes some to the state for rural fire. So they all go to the state collects, the county collects it and distributes it. The only portion that increases with a county levy is the county portion. And most people don't pay very much. I think on mine it's like $100 a year on my county taxes. But my county taxes are a lot more than that. So if you multiply the small portion most people's taxes on all the recent levies, the average increase would have been somewhere between 150 and 200 at the most. So you don't multiply the entire tax bill. It's only the county portion, not the rest of it.
Which is only 8.2% of a bill. So I think that's an important distinction. So out of a $1,000 example, $82 is what comes to the county, which would be adjusted from $59 to $1.99. So at that point, it's really, it's not $3,000. It would go up, you know, obviously about three times. $80 is $240. So
about 240.
That would be the increase. Not
$3,000. Okay. And I'll address some of the other issues later. Someone else on this side? Okay, anyone on this side wish to speak? Dale Matthews.
Dale Matthews, Grants Pass. The great thing about volunteers is they work with badcounty.com to keep track of county government that has some problems with honesty and with integrity. So I encouraged our viewers of Inside News to go on down to Galise Road over the holiday. Go on over to Tom Pierce Road. I went to both of those places and also to the city park here. What I found doesn't match with what you're saying. It is certain that if there were, as you said in a meeting, that if there were logging trucks there, that would be a problem. There are no logging trucks there. Why would a logging truck be parked on the side of the road to get into a park? Oh, well, there could be boats parked there. Why would you park boats on the side of the road instead of taking them down to the boat ramp? There were no boats parked there. This is an obvious attempt by you to try to force people to get in there and pay that fee that you so desperately want. And a fee is a tax. It's false. I saw it with my own eyes. It's just not happening. Now, it's certainly true that if people were parked on both sides of the street all the time, that that could be a problem. So you put the no parking signs on one side of the street. Or you put signs saying, no logging trucks. That you apparently seem to think that they are there. They're not there. Don't park your boat here in the middle of the street. That would be a happy, helpful thing. Remember, the reason that this started was that you had suggested that you were going to turn streets into parks. That was your original plan. All those streets leading into it would be a park. When we go to the fairgrounds, there's lots of people who don't want to pay through the nose for parking. They park along the side of the street. When we go over here for Boatnik, there are lots of people who do not want to park in some expensive place. They park along the street. We all know how to park along a street. We don't need your help to do so. All you're trying to do is force us into that priced parking. If you were really interested, if you were truly interested in keeping people safe, you would not have the parking fee in the parks, would you? You would say, come on down here and you're going to be safe. But you don't want to do that because that would take money out of the pockets of the county. Now, these couple hundred dollars in fees, they're going to go to the state, but you're trying to force people into this. It won't make any difference what I say or what anybody says. You're going to do it anyway. But if you're going to be giving out reasons, oh, it's the safety of the children, why don't you just say that people have to do this because it's a UFO parking lot on the street? It's just as sensible.
Anyone else wish to speak? Okay, I'll bring it back to the board.
Madam Chair, I just want to address Mr. Ford's issue. I think it's also a point to clarify that this parking citations that may or may not be issued, if there are violators who park in the no parking area, those revenues don't come to the county. It's actually kind of a negative thing. So we're not exactly excited about people receiving these tickets. It would be ideal if they just complied with the no parking zone. I think, just for clarification, I've never seen a logging truck, and I've never said that I saw a logging truck parked there. I think logging trucks use that road on a regular basis, and that when you're parking a boat trailer, after you put your boat through the boat ramp into the river, you've got to put it someplace. People come back up to the road, they park there. Whether there's a boat on a trailer or not, it still takes the same amount of space up when you park it, and that adds to congestion, and it's not a safe situation there, having logging trucks utilizing the road with boat trailers parked on the side of the shoulder. There's just not adequate space there to do that safely. So I think that's pretty important, and just as an example of how somebody who's only listening with the intent to be malicious really just hears what they want to. You can really look over these things. There's no intent by the county to be malicious here. This is something that we have worked on. The Parks Advisory Board's boards have endorsed this idea. Public Works Director endorses this idea. Parks Director endorses this idea as something that is in need to improve the safety, especially at Tom Pierce Park. I don't know how you miss the cars that are parked out there every single day. There are people parking out there, maybe not at the boat ramp, but certainly at Tom Pierce, and that's a real issue. I think every single time I've been to Tom Pierce, there are people who are parked right along that road, and that's a real problem. I think the issues that Ms. Dawson brought up, there's a reason why Jackson County can contribute 100% of their lottery dollars and can afford to do so. It's about $800,000 to $900,000. Jackson County is in a much different fiscal position at $2 a thousand. They have incredible discretion given their incredible general fund they don't even need their lottery dollars. They should theoretically be able to send them back. We need every dollar we have, and we try to use it as diligently as possible. If you take the $300,000 to $400,000 of lottery revenue and we contribute that to the sheriff's office, I don't really know how much of a bang for the buck. We contributed $425,000 of road dollars a number of years ago to three deputies, and that's what we borrowed money from the road department. And I'm not sure that we really had much of a result by those three deputies for a year. And if it's a short-term solution, it's probably not going to provide long-term gain. I think the investments that we need to make in economic development, utilizing 1% of the lottery revenue that's returned from the state, goes a long way. And could we be doing better with that? Yes. I think that's one of the reasons we've invested in establishing a plan so that we're being more effective with those dollars. But it's just a difference of opinion of how those monies should be spent. I never want to have a conversation about prioritization of discretionary dollars without referencing 77% of the discretionary general fund revenue that the county does generate goes directly to public safety. I don't know of another county who probably contributes a higher percentage of those funds to that issue. It goes to the criminal justice system, so the DA, the Juvenile Shelter and Detention Facility, and our sheriff's office. I think that says every full measure of what we're trying to do as a county with that high prioritization. Those are my comments, Madam Chair.
Okay. All right.
Yes,
yes, Commissioner
Harris. I wanted to reiterate, if 70, we have discretionary monies that we can do with what other monies come and they have to go to this department, that operation. 77% of what we have making discretionary decisions on goes to the criminal justice service or system. I think it's 68% of that money, of what discretionary money, goes now to the sheriff's department. That's the money we have control over to determine where it's going to go. We have made a decision that 68% of that is going to go to the sheriff's department as of today. And that's the way this has been. It's not that we are not giving any money to the sheriff's department. We're giving the yeoman's share of the funds to the criminal justice system, of which the sheriff's department gets the bulk of. So it's not quite accurate to say we don't give any money to the sheriff's department. Also, the comment was made that our plans are a synonym for a levy. I don't know where that has a lifestyle. I might have a pretty good idea, but we can't pass a levy ourselves, and it has to be passed by the voters of the Josephine County. If the voters of Josephine County decide 60-40 that they want to spend, you know, $5 a thousand on XYZ, okay, I mean, I might not agree with it, but that's what the voters have said to do. We cannot pass a levy unilaterally because all three of us think it's a great idea, and we're going to do that. We can't do that. But that keeps being repeated as if it is a done deal, and it's not a done deal by any means. I have said myself personally, I'm not going to support the initiation of a levy from the board. I'm not going to support, and I've maintained that for 3.5 years. And I'm just not, so I don't know where that has its life. I have a pretty good idea, but because untruths that are told over and over and over and over and over and over and over again, they do take on a life of their own. And that becomes truth in people's minds. And it's just a sad thing. But there's no foundation of fact to support the idea that we are not giving money to the Sheriff's Department or that we are going to sneak through some levy of some sort. That just doesn't exist. It can't be. It just can't be. The idea of mineral withdrawal, that's a bone of contention. Mineral withdrawal is a real innocuous name. It sounds, we all want mineral withdrawal. We want it, but that is not what the federal government's mineral withdrawal system is. They're saying you cannot withdraw minerals. We are the only ones who will be able to withdraw minerals if we do that on these properties that we are going to set aside and are going to sanctify. So everybody else, you cannot do mineral withdrawal. Sorry. And it's sort of a finger in the eye kind of thing, and it does irk me. We cannot withdraw. The government can if they ever would, but we cannot do it. And it sounds innocent, but it is far from being innocent. It's a usurpation of property, of being able to say, this is what you can do on this property, our land. And theoretically, the federal government does not own the land. We are the federal government in that sense. We are the citizens, and we have that voice to say. They are to be the representatives. But when decrees are issued and we don't have any opportunity to put in a meaningful input and an input that is heard, not just listened to, and because you know what the vote's going to be anyway, and that's the danger that we are moving toward, is that we're getting the idea that it doesn't make a hill of beans of difference what we say, it's going to get done anyhow. And that's a very dangerous place in which to be. And obviously I don't support it. I have made my voice known to both of the senators on that, but it takes a whole lot more voices than just mine or even yours. And the reality is that we are in a ball game that we are the minority members of, and the other team has all the points, and they have the ball, and they make the rules. So something has to change, and that does not change at the county level. That has to change at a national level. But that's outside of our purview. So thank you, ma'am.
Madam Chair, there were a couple things just on that mineral withdrawal. That's a pretty contentious issue in Josephine County, Mr. Rice, and I think you would appreciate that and know that. If this board were to put forth a non-binding question about that mineral withdrawal, I have a pretty good indication that it isn't going to be a majority of the people who actually don't want that mineral withdrawal. It might be a pretty non-vocal minority, but the people that I understood that came to the town hall sessions and stuff, most of those were in favor of that mineral withdrawal. And I think it's a real sad, because it's fine to do it over here, but the problem is that once you do it over there, it seems to creep, and it'll eventually take over everywhere. We're a really mineral-rich county. Even if this area doesn't have a single active mining operation right now, it doesn't mean you wouldn't want one in the future, that the area doesn't have potential, and that the technology used for mineral withdrawal doesn't have to be the way we used to do it in the past of open strip mines and that sort of thing. I think they can do things a little bit more technically advanced now. But that, as Commissioner Heck said, I think we've voiced, and if you have another you said forceful was the word you used, means to restrict the administration from doing this. The best use of force I can see is electing people like Congressman Walden in the House, who can kind of bridle the administrative powers. But those have been legally contested, and I'm sure they will continue to be so. I don't have a whole lot of examples of where that legal process has said, no, the president doesn't have authority under the Administrative Procedures Act to set these grand set-asides, you know, continue to do this. And I think we should all hunker down, because it's going to happen, as it always does in the last few days of administrations. And this is one we're getting knowledge of. How many are out there that, you know, you're focused on this one? There's a dozen others that you don't even know about yet. And that's, frankly, what scares me most, is that there's areas where people are processing and there are looking to do things and generate, you know, revenue. And that's going to be all of this O&C litigation that the board is participating in an aggressive fashion, putting resources behind in a winnable win, could be for naught. If an administration said, we're going to set aside all O&C lands and have them administratively withdrawn from processing, that changes the game. Like Commissioner Heck said, they make the rules. We're playing catch-up at almost every stage. I know people talk about other things we could do, and I'd love to sit down and chat with you about what it is we could be doing that we're not, because I don't want to leave any stone unturned with the options. Sorry to...
Commissioner, by me.
Sorry to jog your thought.
I meant to, no, yeah, didn't take much. Mr. Gray came up and made some pretty strident comments. Most of his comments that he made were that's the city's issue. That's not the county's issue. As far as, you know, seeing his kids and they're right next to their needles on the ground, that's a city issue. That's not a county issue. And even though we might like to get involved in that, we have enough troubles of ourselves. But that those kinds of concerns need to be taken to the city, not to the county. Thank you.
Ms. Austin regularly comes to the meetings, and I see she's already left. I think simply because she wants to stir the pots and she leaves. She also comes to our Illinois Valley meetings occasionally when we have quarterly meetings out there, and makes the accusations in regards that we're not funding safety, it's not a priority. As has been stated here previously, it is. It gets 77% of all of the discretionary money that we have goes to public safety. And I know this board, since we've been here, that every extra amount of money that comes in has been going to public safety for the last 3.5 years. And I'd like to address the economic development funds. People seem to think that just because other counties do certain things with them that we will be able to do the same thing. We don't get nearly as much money in economic development funds as other counties do. This year we were fortunate, we get $400,000. We do not spend the money in the same year we receive it. What we're using this year is what we got last year, and then what we'll be using next year is what we get this year. That way, we always know for sure how much that we can spend during that year. And we're not spending money before we actually receive it, because we get it quarterly. But economic development is a critical factor in Josephine County, and some of that money goes to our departments to assist them in coming up with matching funds for grants, which this county operates 90% of our budget is on grants. So basically we're on the dole from the government somewhere, typically. And so we have to have the matching funds. And by getting those grants in here, it has a multiplier factor in regards to providing jobs in the local community. Some of this money goes to the library for the technical system there for people who do not have computers at home. They can go and access that for job searches or job interviews or assistance in various aspects of their business. And parks, we use it for improvement in our parks, because parks are huge in our county as far as tourism and bringing in revenue. Our airport is growing faster than we can keep up with it. It's an indicator of the economic health of the community that has been improving over the last couple, 3 years. And those grants are very large grants. Over this next year, we'll be bringing in $6 million of grants at our airport. We have to have the matching funds for those. But that $6 million, if you use the multiplier effect, 6 times 6 is $36 million. So that will be money that will be generated and circulated through our community. So we are using this economic development money to create jobs in our community, to add to the economic viability of our community, and working on infrastructure. So it is critical that we have that small amount of money, that $400,000. We also have a small loan program that we work with the Small Business Development Center through RCC and the Illinois Valley Community Development Program. They have made many loans over the last year through that program to businesses in this community, and to get them started or to expand them or keep them in business. And that is a factor that is critically important because most lending institutions do not make small loans. They don't want to be bothered. It's too costly to make them and service them. So this is an opportunity for these small businesses to get loans up to $25,000. So we have invested this money in the community, worked very hard to make sure it goes to targeted areas so that it provides seed money that will actually be magnified or expanded through the community. So to even consider that we would take economic development money for a short-term fix in the Sheriff's Department, $400,000 would not do much of anything. It is a very small amount of money when it comes to a budget that is in excess of $10 million. So anyway, in the public safety. And then the $1.5 million in public works, I know I've said this many, many times, and our finance director brought a chart. Our bridges, roads and bridges and public works funds have been declining at the rate of $2 million a year over the last, I believe it was 9 years, something like that, 9 years. And so declining at $2 million, we only have $4 million in there. At that rate, we would only have 2 years left in our roads and bridges fund. So we have to be very judicious, very careful about how we use that money and be prepared for all of the types of things that happen that have happened several times this year, spillways, culverts, rock slides, all those things that you can't really budget for. You have to dip into that contingency fund. And lastly, I'd like to say, Mr. Matthews made a statement, it won't make any difference what I say. If Mr. Matthews were credible in what he said, but several of the things he said today are not true, and I think that people in the community are beginning to recognize that. For instance, him saying that we said that a logging truck was using it. We never said a logging truck was parking along the side of the road. We're interested in getting that fee. That's never been our consideration. We don't get any fees for the fines. They go to the state. It's under state statute. So any fines that would be issued would be state. And then pay through the nose to park at the parks. You can get a $30 a year park pass. That's 30 bucks a year, and you can park all you want in the park. That is hardly paying through the nose. So if you wish to be taken seriously and make a difference, you need to be credible in what you say. So I really think that people need to pay attention to that. And if you're interested in knowing what we actually say at the meeting, they're posted online. So that being said, we'll move on to motions for our admin calendar. Item 4A.
Yeah, Madam Chair, I would move for approval of resolution number 2016-044.
Those are corrected, aren't they? Oh, yes, that's the correct one. I'm sorry. I apologize.
That's fine.
I was on the wrong line myself.
In the matter of amending the solid waste collection franchise agreement with Grants Pass Sanitation, Inc., doing business as Republic Services of Grants Pass, and franchise agreement amendment number 2016-1.
Second.
I have a motion, a second. Any further discussion? Okay, I just want to thank you for your presentation today. Appreciate that. And I think Commissioner Heck would like to talk to someone about that survey.
Sure.
Okay. Excuse me.
Well,
hair.
That would be fine, too. But
you know, you guys make it hard for me. Heck and hair, you know.
Actually.
Commissioner Hare would like to do that. So thank you very much.
Yeah.
Roll call, please.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Motion carries. Item 4B.
And I move for approval of order number 2016-018 in the matter of regulation of motor vehicle parking on Galise Road.
Second.
Motion and second. Any further discussion? Being none, roll call.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, motion carries. Item 4C.
And I'll move for approval of order number 2016-019 in the matter of regulation of motor vehicle parking on Pierce Park Road.
Second.
I have a motion, a second. Any further discussion?
No, I just appreciate that. It's a challenging legal element that I thought we had to overcome to put this into place. But really, it's been something that I think will be real positive. We're trying this at two locations, but there are frankly others. I'm sure people have told me that they say, you know, why aren't you doing this in this place or that place? And we just want to see start small and work our way up to other areas that there is safety concerns associated with this. We know where they are. We're just working on this as a tool in the tool chest.
Thank you. Roll call, please.
Yes.
I just woke up. No. And is it possible for me to go back and amend the four?
We've already voted.
Yeah. I made my comments. I will vote no on 4C. Yeah, 4C.
And Walker, yes. Two, yes. One, no. Commissioner Heck, no. Okay, item 4D.
Madam Chair, I'd move for approval of contract with PropertyRoom.com for the auction services for unclaimed property in the possession of the sheriff.
Do I have a second?
Yes, I will second that.
Any further discussion?
I just wanted to say that I know that the sheriff has got statutory requirements for trying to locate those people who this stuff has been confiscated. If you filed a police report, I believe that that's cross-checked to see that there's any of the evidence that's been collected has been attempted to get back to these people. The revenue also doesn't go to the sheriff's office. It goes back to the board for discretion on how it's allocated.
And that's one of the things, too, that we tend to forget about. It's not a matter of confiscating somebody's property as a result of a crime, and then it is sold. I mean, there's a whole process of, pardon the use of the word busy work, because that's sort of a pejorative, but there's a whole lot of busy work that has to go into place before anything is ever sold in any way. And that's just one of the – this is trying to expedite the final process rather than continue to put more and more and more burden on one person that's managing that whole operation out there.
I think this also brings to light the issue in regards to people's own property. If you have valuables, take pictures of them, record their serial numbers. You know, when you file a police report, be sure you file a complete report. If you discover something else missing, amend the report. You know, those are the kinds of things that you can prove to get your money, to get your property back. And I know I had to do this once myself in regards to my home being burglarized a number of years ago. And I only was able to recover one thing, but that was because I had a picture of it and could identify it. And so it's really important that that you do that, because there's a lot of property they can't give back to people because they have no way of proving that it was theirs. So that would be one. And, of course, it doesn't take but just one item to prove it's yours. So please do that. Okay, roll call.
Commissioner Hare.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, motion carries. Item 4E.
Madam Chair, if the board would indulge me, I'd make a motion like we did the last time for timber sales to put those two together in the same motion.
You're fine with me.
Fine with me.
So I'd move to approve item 4E and F, which is approval of timber sale contract with Greg Lyles Logging, Walker Complex 2016T-3, and item 4F, which is approval of timber sale contract with Swanson Group Manufacturing LLC, Bear Gulch 2016T-7.
And I'll second that.
I have a motion, a second. Any further discussion?
No.
Being none, roll call.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, motion carries. Moving on to the consent calendar, item 6A are various minutes, executive session, the open portion, May 18th, 2016, county administration workshop, May 19th, 2016, general discussion, May 24th, 2016, weekly business session, May 25th, 2016, and public hearing on the dog chasing livestock on May 25th, 2016. Any questions, comments?
I'm just going to abstain from voting as the consent calendar contains a meeting that I didn't purposely participate in.
And I will.
We can separate that out if you would like.
It's not necessary.
Pardon?
It's not necessary.
I will move for approval of the consent calendar.
Second that.
Okay. Any further discussion?
No.
Okay. Roll call.
Abstain.
Yes.
Yes. Motion carries. Two in favor, one abstention. Okay, moving on. Item 7. Do we have any other business that we need to address today?
I have none.
None.
None? Okay. Moving on. Matters from commissioners?
Madam Chair, I just received word that the Oregon Department of Forestry regulates when fire season is going to start in Josephine County, frankly, in southern Oregon in general. I think the initial thought was that it was going to be closer to the middle of June. However, given the high temperatures and low humidity, they have moved that up with a press release to June 30th, this Friday at 12:01 a.m. I think that's how.
June 3rd.
Third. Big distinction. June 3rd. I believe it starts at 12:01 a.m. That's in
12:01 a.m.
A.m. Mm-hmm. I think that's important for people to remember. There is still other regulations that are in effect as far as I think you can maybe you have to contact your local fire agency provider to find out the specifics on whether or not burn barrels are still allowed and some other things, weed whacking and lawn mowing and areas that aren't irrigated. Those are all regulated as well under this, and stuff needs to be, it's getting dry. And there's a really interesting chart with the propensity to burn in that press release. So I encourage people to go on our website, which we'll have it posted there, and they'll be able to take a look at that, what the major season is. It's basically June through October of when fires have a higher propensity within. But we've seen them in as early as February 2 years ago. So just because it's now fire season doesn't mean, you know, Friday's that much different than today. People still need to have caution about what they're doing and make sure that they're complying with all of their local fire protection districts regulations. We talked a lot about parks today. I just want to encourage people to pick up their park passes. The annual pass is $30 or to volunteer for our parks. A family of four can volunteer for 2 hours and doing various things within our park system. The parks doesn't get any general fund, and that's an example of the prioritization as this board has said. Other than the economic development dollars that we do allocate, roughly $40,000 a year on average to our park system, they are 100% self-sufficient. So I think it was commendable that Mr. Rice or someone else mentioned that we should just not charge or maybe charge a residency element that people are paying for these services. Most of our parks were developed with ONC shared receipt dollars back in the day when we had plenty. And nowadays, they don't get any general fund tax revenue. And so there really isn't a direct tie to the check people are paying at a local level on a regular basis to how the park system is operated. Without those day use fees and the camp fees, our park system wouldn't be operating. We would actually need, in a couple of years ago, contemplated how do we strategically reduce the number of parks that we operate with the limited staff that we have. I think historically we have had an excess of 20, maybe close to 30 park staff, and now we're down to roughly about 6 to 8 parks full-time employees at any given time. And they just do a tremendous amount of work keeping our park system open and looking professional and to be commended. A lot of them were working this last weekend so people could enjoy their Memorial Day utilizing our system, which provides 80% of the public access to the Rogue River within Josephine County. I wanted to thank all of the volunteers for putting on the Boatnik activities this last weekend. The Active Club just does a tremendous amount. They start right now thinking about next year and how to prepare and make next year better. All of the people that came out, I think it benefits the economy locally tremendously, but it is another example of how volunteers really make our community the great place that it is to live and enjoy. The last thing on a somewhat negative is there's just been a habit of vitriol-style accusations that have come before this board, and I can get that from a standpoint that people are frustrated. I think it's a cumulative effect of what the city, county, state and federal governments have done. It's unfortunate that I think that much like I've seen in planning departments or building and safety and others, they take this attitude of regulation rather than facilitation. I have tried to approach the position of commissioner as a facilitating what the community really wants. I think that's one of the reasons I'm a huge proponent of asking non-binding resolutions, questions of the voters, more so than any other board in the state and any other board in Josephine County's history. This board has put forward non-binding questions that have to do with really big issues. The wild and scenic designation of the Rogue River from the Applegate to through Josephine County to Lost Creek Dam, I think is just another example how the best government is one that's in tune with the people. And I think, as Commissioner Heck referenced, the only levy that this board has put forth has been the one initially when these two members came on approaching 4 years ago. It was also the closest levy that we've had out of 11 attempts, and this board has not put one on since. We gave it a shot, asked the voters. It was roughly 250, under 300 people voting a different way would have put that into a positive. I don't think that was such a negative question to put before the voters. We've certainly seen questions that have come that are as big of an issue come before the voters of Josephine County and be even tighter than that, but that doesn't mean you don't ask them. Constantly give people the opportunity to choose. The only levy or something to vote on that I would say is before I make a decision to close like a jail facility, I won't make that decision unilaterally. I will give the voters an opportunity to weigh in on that. That's something that really is above my pay grade. Yeah, the voters of Josephine County have spoken that they do want a jail because they voted to pay to build one in 1996, 1997. That's a 20-year bond. It's about 15.9 cents a thousand. That expires November of 2017. I'm not going to say unilaterally, if we don't have the funds to operate a jail, that I'm going to close it without asking the voters of Josephine County as to whether or not they'd want to continue to fund and pay for that. That's something that I would say is in need of asking the voters on. We are degrading into a point of contentious type of discussions. Commissioner Haugen said something pretty poignant once. It's easy to govern when times are easy and there's plenty of resources. It's frankly really challenging to do it when there's a limited amount of resources, which I don't think anybody would contest that we have a limited amount of resources. When you're trying to solve a $5 million project problem with the funding our criminal justice system coming up next year, and vitriolic nature of saying, why don't you go after the lottery funds of $400,000, provides for less than 10% of the solution, and we're being chastised for not even looking at that. Will we look at that next year? I don't think there's anything going to be off the table next year with trying to keep our jail open and limited patrol availability. But that we haven't thought about that is something, I mean, give us a little bit of credit with being able to maintain 80% of the services that we used to do, having reduced the budget back a couple of years ago by 40%. They don't teach you that in business school. I don't know how you do that. You know, who's doing that in the state? But all I hear typically is what a terrible job we're doing by people who really don't know a distinction from the city to the county as far as policy. So how credible of a critic are you when there's a limited amount of knowledge that you come to the table with and you want me to listen to your input when there's basic elements that you're not necessarily grasping? And I don't know if that's the constituent's fault. I listen and I write down, as an example, every person's comments. I've been doing this for 5-6 years now. And I have a record. I keep every weekly business sessions copies, and I do review them from time to time. That's why I keep them. But I think it's a time that we need to provide, you know, joint responsibility here. We need the community to come together and really work at finding solutions to these problems as opposed to just throwing mud or pointing fingers at people who haven't done enough in their measure to solve the problem. I think every one of us has sacrificed a tremendous amount to do this position. This salary was a salary reduction for me when I took this job 6 years ago. We've not had a cost of living increase. I've never experienced that since I've been working, that I didn't have a COLA. I didn't have a cost of living or a CPI adjustment in my salary until I came here, which is fine because I don't think any one of us ran for this position because of the salary. I think we all could be doing something that, frankly, was easier personally and probably more lucrative professionally. But that's not why we're doing this. We're doing this because somebody had to step off of the couch, get involved in the solution, and that's what drives each and every one of us every day. And coming to these meetings, I've been to almost, I guess it's over 250 of these weekly business sessions, and none of them have gone probably without some sort of criticism, sometimes justified and sometimes just by people who are frustrated, which I appreciate. I could talk for a long time, but it all comes back to inspiration. Thank goodness that it isn't necessarily these weekly business sessions that satisfy me in this position. It's the things, the small incremental improvements that we can do and have done to make this a better place. I don't have kids. My family is fairly senior. I want this for other people, the friends that I grew up with, the families that I do know who utilize all these services. I know a lot of people in this community, and that's what drives me each and every day to do just a little more than I did yesterday to try to improve this place. That's the only thing that motivates me in this position, because otherwise I'd have left it a long time ago.
Good, thank you. Update on the Sheriff's Department has a boat, marine boat patrol, or marine patrol, that's what I was trying to say, that inspects boats. And they are having the courtesy boat exam day on Saturday, June 11th. So if you are in question or you would like to have your boat pristine as it is, justified that it is indeed that, that's the day to set aside. And the event will be taking place from 8 a.m. until 12 noon at the parking lot of the Josephine County Jail, which is right over behind Fred Meyer and Walmart over there. So bring your boat, all your required equipment and paperwork. And they'll have plenty of other literature to pass out as well. The Grants Pass Food Project Month, we had the representatives from the Raptor Creek Farm here. And one of the things that was mentioned, and I think we all need to be reminded of it, it is so easy to throw away food, whether we're individually or whether we are businesses. And that is something that just from a ethical standpoint, we need to all become a little bit more interested in and in dealing with the food waste. As many people as there are that are hungry and shortages of adequate dietary intake here in the county, and to think that we're throwing away food that could be used in some way is really, it's beyond belief. Food and Friends of Josephine County, they have a new flyer that is out. They're in the process of building a facility up on, renovating the facility up on 9th Street, I think it is. It's and they're involved in this capital campaign to redo that building and to rehab it to make it acceptable as a permanent home for the senior Meals on Wheels program. And if you want more information on that, you can contact me, but I would suggest you contact RV Cog, and they are the main agency that's involved in that. But it is a Josephine County program, though it is associated with RV Cog, but it's a Josephine County program. And last but not least, I've had everybody's heard, certainly, and we have heard, I've heard, the ethics situation. My ethics charges have been resolved. They are now completed. Everybody has signed off on them. It is now official. The paperwork is in my case now online, and if anybody wants to see it, you can go online and see the charges and the resolution of the charges and what it has involved. and that's now online.
Okay. There was a press release put out recently from our Josephine County Buildings Department, and we now have e-permitting in place. Actually went into place on May the 23rd. I'm not the liaison here. Would you like to talk about this, Commissioner?
Okay. Go ahead.
Okay. And there's training in regards to this. The online access, you can apply or pay for and receive building permits 24/7, automated inspection scheduling by phone or computer, comprehensive permit tracking and data collection, electronic plan review, and mobile app for inspectors and contractors. So this is in keeping with the extra efforts of Robert Rice, head of that department, and, of course, our goals as a board to get more information technology and technology in place so the public is better served. And you can contact, if you have any questions, our Building Safety Department at 541-474-5405. And then there's an email address, jocobldgsafe@josephine.or.us. So if you are a contractor or someone contemplating building, that's going to be a really good advancement. As I mentioned earlier in the meeting, because Mr. Ertl had brought it up, but we have scheduled a program called Marijuana Planning Ahead. All the meetings are scheduled at 6:30 p.m. The first one is June the 9th at Williams Grange, 20,100 Williams Highway in Williams. The next one is Tuesday, June 14th at Wolf Creek Community Center in Wolf Creek. The following Thursday, June 23rd, at the Ann Basker Auditorium, which is right here at Grants Pass. And then the last one is Tuesday, June 28th, in the Cave Junction County Building at the corner there. It's 102 South Redwood Highway. And those are all to discuss planning ahead, mostly land use and planning issues in regards to implementation of the recreational marijuana. Yes.
And just one, can we maybe alter that title to cannabis? And just take, because that some people only hear marijuana and they think of some guys sitting there smoking a joint. But to change it to cannabis, because that is what the industry is moving toward.
Well, actually, we're dealing with recreational marijuana, and that's what the statute calls it.
Okay. Well, that's fine.
But
that's fine.
I understand what you're saying.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's not the medical marijuana.
Yeah.
It's not the medical aspect at all. It's just recreational marijuana. So, anyway, that's the program. And I know I have visited with a few people in the industry, and some of the issues that they brought forth, this board has been trying to deal with. We have pretty much had a hands-off attitude towards it because we don't want to put in place conflicting rules with the state, but we're trying now. The state has provided some opportunity for us of time, place, and manner, so we're going to be dealing with some of those issues over the next few months.
I don't believe that hands-off is the appropriate terminology for me to reflect my attitude or activities. I've been working through AOC through the implementation committee, the 91 Measure 91 Implementation Committee, working on legislation through legislative actions of 3400. So I think that this board has been doing actually a lot.
We have been doing a lot, and I probably mischaracterized the word by hands-off. I meant was that we were not trying to circumvent or override or unduly regulate without knowing or complying with what the state was requiring. So perhaps that was not the proper use of words. Okay, also, as of today, we have a new community development and planning director. Her name is Julie Smelcher. She's starting today. And so give her one day to catch her breath, but you're welcome to contact her and welcome her to the community. And if you have any issues, she comes to us from Curry County. We have been trying for close to a year now, I think, to try to find a new community development planning director. Historically, that department was just planning, but we wanted to expand it to community development so we would have a home for community development issues, someone to as a resource, because most of the community development type things also involve some kind of planning issues. So we thought that this would be a one place for it to reside. So we have undertaken, I think, three different searches trying to find a person that would fit this and fit into our community. and have had the experience in these areas, and I think we have found that in Julie Schmelzer. So today is her first day, so I will be going over to see her and give her a little orientation in regards to some of the things that we're planning ahead, but we're very happy to have her. So,
much like many of our department heads that we've hired, and I think all but two we've replaced since I've been here, I would say that we were blessed in this effort to be able to pick somebody we wanted as opposed to settle for somebody we needed to fill the position. And she came to us highly recommended by people she's worked with in the past and in Curry County and around the other areas of the state, and just I think we're really blessed to have her. The focal point for me was the idea that most planning departments, building and safeties, have an attitude of regulation, and like I said earlier, we're really looking to try to facilitate within the confines of the law a solution to the desired needs that the applicant, the client, would like to do. And this board has done more than most, I would say, in trying to accommodate that, amending the comp plan and the regulations to allow agricultural use, if possible, on industrial land for nurseries and other things. Certainly the cannabis industry would fit into that. And the other one is to, what's the other thing we did?
Growing an industrial zone.
That was what I just referenced, I thought. And then
commercial zone.
Yeah, there's some other things that we've done. Oh, facilitating, you know, the process for a Mr. Anderson of the world who's had 30 years of a land use challenge that, frankly, should have been solved by previous boards, but they kicked the can down the road, and this board has not done that. We didn't do that with the urban growth boundary. I don't know if you guys were on the board when we went through that, but I think you were for the final stuff.
There
was
several
pieces of property that were in the city and in the county. And what do you do with a piece of property that's in both jurisdictions? It leaves it impossible to develop, to do anything with it. We were champions of making sure that those were either included or excluded, and they were both included. It's little things like that that go without being said of just us not kicking the can for 30 years down the road and addressing these issues. So she'll be a great, great addition to our staff and our team, and look forward to many good things.
Okay. All right. Anything else? All right. Thank you. We are adjourned at 10:48 a.m.